System that they put in over there.
Oh, they're having problems. They're having problems.
But I'm sure to get special.
We'll get it. Yeah.
I told them they mentioned the community. I'll just tell them.
Hope we can do something.
Take your shit off.
Don't start.
Don't start. All coming back. Okay. I'd like to recognize the presence of council members who are here. Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Taggart, Councilman Smiley, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Dillon, Councilman Retta, my trustee aide, Mrs. Sharnice Jackson, and Councilman Powers has notified us that he is excused from the committee meeting today. What's your pleasure on the minutes?
Motion approved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Ordinance number 15005, Councilwoman Dillon.
Remaining on the table.
Okay, that's going to remain on the table this evening. Next on the agenda, we have an update on and presentations from the Chief. Department of Public Safety from the chiefs, and it's my understanding we're going to start with Chief Miller.
Yes, Councilman, thank you. Jeff Miller, Chief of Communication. I have a couple of handouts here that I will hand out while I'm discussing our new CAD upgrade.
You give me a handout, I won't be able to spend it.
This past Monday morning, we upgraded to the New World CAD system. What that did for us was it replaced the 23-year-old computer-aided dispatch system that we have been using.
Great chaos.
And actually connects us to every police entity through one computer throughout the state of Delaware right now, with the exception of Seaford and the Delaware State Police. With Seaford and Dover, who are not yet live, but as soon as the rest of the CAD system is implemented, we will for once be able to share information up and down the state about crimes that have happened. And if a police car pulls someone over in Rehoboth and Newcastle County police pull them over 2 or 3 hours later up here in Newcastle County, they will have all the information available to them relevant to the first car stop. It might be very important for that police officer to know that information. The upgrade, I will say, was very successful because we're using the CAD. The personnel are going through some, are going through some hurdles because we've changed the way they've been doing things for 23 years. So I liken it to if you got in your car today and put, you found that your ignition was on the left side of the column and your brake pedal was where your gas pedal was, things would be different for a while, but eventually we would be able to drive the car to where we need to get to. So they're struggling through a few little hurdles in their work world, but for the most part, we have seen a data stream available to us today like we've never seen before. We have all of our history from our old CAD, which was loaded into the new CAD system, and we can currently share information between the city of Wilmington and the state of Delaware in real time back and forth, and that's something we've never been able to do in the past. So we're making strides, tiny little steps, but in the long run, we're going to have a much better information sharing system to where if Colonel Settings' men respond to an address, and we have been there ever before, that police officer will be able to see that previous information on his mobile terminal before he even goes or enters into that residence. So great safety features available. Chief Tan's people, all of his workforce, are afforded the same opportunity to see. Before we went live on this system, we relied on the radio dispatchers to tell EMS, hey, the police are going, and we handled everything as two separate complaints in two different worlds, and sometimes all the information wasn't relayed as accurately or as quickly as possible. Now, today, when you dial 911 in Newcastle County, we handle everything as one call for service, and then we add each entity to that call for service. So if there's a car accident on I-95, We enter one incident in the computer system. We put the state police on it. We put the city of Wilmington on it. We put Larry's ALS units on it. And they can all see what each other's doing. And it just gives great safety features for our field responders. And we should see within a few months a much more effective delivery of the service by the field responders. So that's where CAD is, if anyone has any questions for that.
I also like to recognize the presence of Council President Bullock and Councilman Wyatt.
Thank you. So when you used to call 911, the first question was fire, ambulance, or police?
Yes.
Do you still ask that question, or?
The first question we're asking today is, what is the address of your emergency?
Okay.
So we can get the call for service immediately in the computer. If we determine it's police, the call taker will still continue to take that call. If it's fire or medical, we will transfer a call over to fire board still and just tell them it's this call for service. So the address part has already been accomplished. Now, with that said, we are still on track to achieve removing that second part of the process so that the call takers just handle all calls from start to finish, and we expect to be there before summertime. So then we will just answer the phone, police, fire, and ambulance, what is the address of your emergency? It just stays there.
Any other questions, comments? Councilman Warren.
Thank you. As we know, most calls emanate from mobile phones. What's your first question? And of course, you know it's a mobile phone. What's your first question?
Still is our address verification to find out where the emergency is located. But you're absolutely correct. 75% of the business we do is cellular, and at best, there's 80% accuracy in location. That's at best.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilman Carter.
And when you're receiving a cell phone 911 call, I think there's an additional difficulty because it depends where the tower picks up the signal. I can tell you that I know that in the northern part of my district and even in other parts, cell phone towers in New Jersey or PA pick up the 911.
We transfer calls to Salem, Chester, Delaware County, probably a couple hundred a day, 100 so a day. And they transfer to us as well. It depends on the carrier and how many lines they have dedicated to 911 on each tower. So if they have 13 lines and they only dedicate 4 for 911, that fifth call is going to go to another tower so that it can get to 911.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, no. Thank you very much.
Would you like me to move in the first net?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you very much. I just wanted to give you an update on first net because when I first took over, I kept hearing about a process about a public safety grade data network and that it would be up and running in some states by 2018. So the dates have changed a bit, and at first I didn't think it would get accomplished by 2018 or even 2022. But as I was appointed by the county executive to, after Dave Roberts retired, to take his place on the state interoperable executive committee board member, I learned a lot about the public safety data network that we're hoping to move forward with. Recently, I spent 2 days in West Virginia for a mid-Atlantic type meeting of FirstNet, and the bottom line is it's getting closer. There are people currently looking to build a data network that is specific to public safety, and it's public safety grade. So it's what this would deliver to us is we would no longer rely on these type of devices through an open carrier or an open market. It would be public safety only, so we're not susceptible to the failures that could take place in the private market. Additionally, when the World Trade Centers came down, the system we all remember, no one could use a cell phone, no one could get data. The public safety grade network would not be overloaded by the use of the private network. So I'll just go through the PowerPoint here. I'm not going to take a lot of your time because Delaware truly is just in the planning stage right now. Like I said, I sit on the statewide executive committee, but the statewide interoperable coordinator and council are people from my shop that determine, you know, what are our data needs in 2018 and 2022 when this thing might come to fruition. The law was passed in 2012 that would support the funding, and that basically came from the Middle Class Tax Relief Job Creation Act. So $7 billion has been set aside to determine, to get us started in building this public safety network. Many people in public safety ask me often, when are we getting our cut of the $7 billion? Because they want to buy laptops or radios and things like that. The $7 billion is specifically for the infrastructure of the network only. So there are no deliverables to the actual field responder, other than when the network, if and when the network is complete, the deliverable would be that the public safety field responders could then become a customer of the product. So that's what they would be using instead of any of the private private people we use today. Just in an effort not to name. Yes.
Councilman.
No, I was just reading through.
Okay. Yeah. So there is some bandwidth that became available through the FCC, and they have allowed the FirstNet to sell that bandwidth off, and it has been quite successful. They've sold a very minor amount of the bandwidth to private entity because it's bandwidth that public safety no longer needs, and they've already raised $1.6 billion in that realm. So who's going to use it? Law enforcement, fire service, medical, federal government, state government, and then there's the people that help us do our public safety jobs each and every day. So electric utilities, water, they need to operate too. They need to be able to share data with us. FirstNet services in all 50 states, 5 territories, Washington, D.C. So picture this event, or picture this data network being built in just over 3 million, or just under 4 million square miles. There's 60,000 public safety agencies that could be affected, 3,250 counties, and 566 tribes. So we have to get all these people to agree that this is something we want to do. The other challenges that exist is the coverage area. Basically, there's dense urban and suburban where we are, and that's where 5% of the people live, but the rural area, and then there's wilderness areas that 20% of 7% of the country is not maintained and occupied by our people, but we still need to have an effective communication system. FirstNet meets the challenges and considers a 3-1 network architecture using a land-based cellular satellite followed by a deployable system to provide coverage. So they would continue to either use or rent space off current towers and providers, build towers and providers, add a satellite network as well, and then for times of disasters, in case something's knocked out, you need a deployable network that you can get to a location that's not functioning and reestablish that service. They highlight here that 4G LTE is 10 times faster than 3G, so anyone that's upgraded their phone in the last 2 years knows how much faster your phone operates in the data mode. And the LTE means long-term examples to, if 5G comes along, 5G has to support 4G. So long-term evolution is what the LTE stands for. How much is it going to cost? That's interesting. When we were in Virginia, it was a 5-state area, and some of the people there that have built networks before believe that they could cover Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, Delaware, and Pennsylvania for somewhere just shy of the $7 billion if it was from the ground up. So if we're trying to make this a nationwide system, it's going to be seriously underfunded. Most likely, it would not be a ground-up build. Most likely, public safety would partner with someone who has most of the infrastructure already in place. So that would reduce a lot of the expenditures. The only thing we would have to maintain is that the sites are hardened and that there's plenty of fail-safe in place. So the basic roadmap of where FirstNet is today is the business plan is in place. Then the SIEC will make a recommendation to the governor's office as to whether the state of Delaware is in their best interest to join into the FirstNet network, or are we okay building our own? And for terms of security reasons, I'll keep this piece limited. The state of Delaware, Gene Donaldson from DelDOT, most specifically, has built a fiber network almost through the entire state of Delaware. He has one more connection to make in the bottom, in the southern end of the state, which would give us the ability to communicate within 18 months in a data connection from West Virginia to New York City. So a lot can be done with infrastructure that has already been put in by states and counties and things like that. So there's a lot to think about. Maybe we partner with FirstNet and they use some of the infrastructure that's already in place. But I just felt it was my obligation as someone that sits on the SIEC representing county government for public safety to give you an update so that when you hear that there's $7 billion out there for a communications network for public safety, that we have a clear understanding that that $7 billion is for the infrastructure, the backroom equipment, and maybe, you know, the state of Delaware at some point would just partner with them and share some of the infrastructure they've already put in place. But the estimates would be is if all states were to either sign on or not by 2016, they would have an idea that they could be substantially operating a network throughout most of the country by 2022. And this is data sharing from police, fire, EMS, our electrical grid information, DelDOT traffic cameras, the capabilities that come with that sharing of information are just enormous. And with that, that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
I'd like to recognize the presence of Co-Chair Bell and Councilman Holland. Co-Chair Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chief, if you would, for the benefit of council, your involvement in the state and on a national level, from just a brief explanation of what you are actually participating in, not just in the state boards and everything, but from a national level with APCO, with NENA, and with the EMD and things of that nature. Just a brief overview, because I think it's important that everyone understand, and a lot of times it's much like and Councilman Weiner talks about the National Association of Counties and what we gain and what we share and what we network. I think it's important for council to understand that our department has key leadership involved in the future of public safety and in 911. So if you could just like a brief overview of what you're involved in.
Okay. I am currently the president of the Mideast chapter of APCO,
which is
the Association of Public Safety Communication Officials. And that's an international group. So I currently, this 2 years now, I've been the president. This is my last year. But we meet quarterly and we discuss technology problems that face communications divisions, public safety as an entire entity, and the back end radio and the back end CAD people are all included in these. And then this year, our APCO International Conference will be in Baltimore. But I normally attend that because I'm the vice president now. So that gives us exposure to 911 center managers and technology people from all over the country and actually all over the world. Last year, there were many people from Dubai there seeking information about how we do things. I am a member of the National, NENA, National Emergency Numbers Association, and I will be attending their conference this year to get the latest and greatest 911 information that's available out there. And as it relates to, I think you were saying, the National Academy of Emergency Dispatch, I am a certified senior instructor in emergency fire dispatch. So not as much now since I'm chief, but I do get the opportunity every so many months to travel throughout the country. And it's very interesting to see other 911 centers and be in their centers training their people and hearing and interacting with their center managers about how they do things and where we are. And, you know, I like to say that our past leadership for our 911 center put us where we are today, and that we're just carrying the torch because we're light years ahead of most of the 911 centers that I go to visit.
Thank you. Thank you for asking.
Councilman Cordy.
Thank you. This is a really fascinating presentation on the FirstNet. But I'm still kind of trying to figure out how they're actually going to get to the 2022 implementation. If you $7 billion in a kitty and only does some mid-Atlantic states, I mean, they're going to be, obviously, the current cellular carriers have this huge network that they've already built. And I guess we'll lease space, local governments will lease space to participate in the FirstNet network.
That would probably be the most cost-effective option. Yeah. The problem those carriers are going to have is, can they harden enough sites and not sell off? Because then they would get in a bidding war of, okay, if we're going to give public safety this much space that never loses service, well, we're going to build in a little extra space and we're going to sell that to other people so that they, you know, can make even more money. And then, you know, what's it worth to the end user? Can you build a FirstNet country throughout the entire country? And can you give it to me for the same price I'm paying today for this device? Or is it going to be twice as much? Because that might be a deal stopper for many of the agencies. But yes, that would be the quickest way to get it up and running. Or they could use, you know, there are other entities that have very large networks in place that are monitoring their own services that they provide.
Entities.
And we could jump on those backbones as well that have already been in place. Just a lot, you know, that's a lot to throw at people, and that's why I like to take this card, and it really is very self-explanatory, what the mission of the FirstNet group is.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments from council? Chief, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
He's a constituent.
Next on the agenda is an update on the Public Safety Rewards Program. Coach Edmund Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we go into executive session with our law enforcement leadership to brief counsel on some very confidential and sensitive information.
Second.
I don't know whether that would be
Point of information. Could we just ask Carol Doolin, counsel to counsel, if this is an appropriate way to phrase this, or if the issue is appropriate?
And then I'll phrase it any way you want me to, but there is information that they will share with counsel regarding the safety rewards program that should not be disclosed outside of this room at this point in time.
Is the executive session on the agenda? I don't have it in front of me.
No.
Okay.
Is there a reason that it can't wait until the next meeting?
Can wait, Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Small.
Yeah, and I just want to say, and I think we've had this discussion before, and it happens, but every agenda should list at the bottom that there's a potential for us to need to go into executive session to discuss matters. I just think as a matter of form, because we never know what's going to come up, and that way we're protected and able to do that. So,
Carol, how does she move it?
Yes.
Carol Doolin, Council to Council. Councilmember Smiley is correct that it is a prudent idea, and certainly if, but according to the Freedom of Information Act, it has to be a little more specific than that. If you know that it's coming up, if it has to do with personnel competency, it has to list that. If it has to do with security measures, I just wanted to expand upon your statement a little bit. The Freedom of Information Act does permit a body to discuss matters that come up at the time of the meeting, but there still has to, it cannot be known in advance to anybody here at this table. It has to really come up at the time of the meeting. And if that's the case, it can't, it has to be a matter that cannot await the next meeting. So those are the state laws.
Well, we certainly are going to follow the law, and I don't know if we want to do any type of overview in regard to the rewards program, if we want to discuss the next meeting completely, I believe. Chief, I think we'll wait and defer to the next meeting. President Bullock.
Council, can they wait and do it? Executive committee?
No.
That's what probably starts.
We're going to be looking to get to the executive committee.
I'm sorry, Ms. Dooley.
Carol Dillon, council to council. If the matter, again, it depends on whether it just arose at the time of this meeting and cannot wait till the next meeting, but if it was known prior to, it has to be added to an agenda, any agenda. And I don't know the answer to that because I'm hearing it for the first time.
Director Brown, we can wait until the next meeting.
And the director speaks, that's it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have anything on the other? Co-Chairman Bell.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We've all, you know, we all read articles in the paper, and since Judge Strine made his comment in the paper, and it made it very public, his position in the paper, I'm only one council person. But I think that we all can make a difference. And I just want to go on record that until such time as Judge Strine and others take a look at our legal system today, our judicial system, our legal system as it stands today, criminal justice system as it stands today, I wouldn't be too fast on criticizing or telling our law enforcement how they should be structured in the state and how they should operate and how they should be combined. We have an excellent law enforcement agency with excellent leadership, second to none. And I think that when you come out and make comment in a paper as to how things should be in law enforcement, I think you need to take a look at your own house. And the criminal justice system in the state is broken. Anything, when you can have a subject go over the counter at 2 a.m. in a Wawa and strangle a woman and throw her to the floor because she's not making the sandwich properly, threatens to shoot and kill everyone inside, flees the scene, Delaware State Police makes the arrest, and he's released on $5,200 unsecured bond. Our system is broke, and our system is what's causing some of the problems out on the street today. So that's just an opinion from one council person. I'm not ready for one police department in this county, and I can only speak to this county. I'm only one council person. But I just want to make my comments known because he chose to make his comments known in the public. I'm a public official. I have constituents that I represent, co-chair of public safety, and I can tell you, he needs to take a look at his own arena first.
Okay, well, under other, and I'm listening, but I have major concerns about the ongoing attacks that by inference and innuendo are directed at the city of Wilmington and crime, and the end-all and cure-all is somebody else can do it better. And all this criticism, and, you know, I'm among the critics, but, you know, I don't see folks reaching out in any significant way up until businesses got concerned. Okay, as long as it was young people shooting young people in the city and nobody else expressed concern, there wasn't a whole lot of concern coming from other entities outside the city of Wilmington government. And two, looking at the judicial system, okay, the length of time that it takes to get indictments for folks who have shot people, murdered people, and the bail issue goes all the way back to the point I said right here in Ray's, in my district, in the Dunleavy Park, in Surrett Park, catch a young man with a Tech 9, and he's pointing at a police officer, and he's out on bail, $2,000 that day, if not the next day. So I think there's a lot of latitude for discussion, a lot of latitude to bring folks together to discuss solutions. I'm glad our Director of Public Safety is on the commission, on the state commission. They're going to meet today at 5:30 at Hicks Anderson Center. But all this criticism now getting, because what you're saying is, if you're going to have one police department, you're going to get rid of two, three, four, whatever. Because, you know, what are you going to do with the smaller municipalities that also have police departments? So I'm concerned as you are, and I don't think there's a great need for finger pointing. There's a need to come together and work together to help reduce crime collectively. So I concur with your concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments? Director Bryan, you want to break up the police department?
I'm making some announcements. First of all, last Thursday evening at the Chase Center, we had our very first graduation for a paramedic class. There were 15. It was really an outstanding ceremony. Councilman Retta and Bell, thank you for coming out. We had probably close to 400 people in that room. It was just a great night, very professionally done, well done, and I commend the chief and his folks for putting on a great show. Thursday morning, 11 a.m. at the Gillian Building, we're going to have a news conference where we will unveil the heroin alert marketing package. So 11 o'clock, Gillian Building. If you have the opportunity, please stop by. It should take about an hour or so. And then that evening, Thursday evening, again at the Chase Center, 7 o'clock, we're going to host our police graduation ceremony. We have 35?
We have 31, 26 in Newcastle County, 5 in Maryland.
So if you're available, please stop by for that. That should be a great night as well. That's all I have. Thank you.
Chairman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was waiting for that report to be given so I could just elaborate just a tiny bit on this. This council and this government as a whole, the administration, along with public safety, has accomplished something that they've never accomplished before. Not only did they graduate 15 paramedics, it is the most diverse class that I think you're going to find in public safety. And the fact of the matter is, did we not only as a council and government overfill the academy, we took the step to get good fellowship out of state, who is a nationally recognized education system, to educate our paramedics. We did not yield or fold, as we've done in the past, to Dell Tech being limited to how many medics we can have in a class. So I think that, you know, when you look at the success story of this class, you look at the diversity, you look at the overfilling, you look at Newcastle County taking control of its own destiny and graduating 15 medics, this government as a whole really deserves a lot of credit. And, you know, Chief Tan, the staff, the personnel and EMS, the director, all public safety works as a team. And the other night they were there as a team when those folks graduated. And, you know, we had folks of very diverse natures that graduated at the top of the class and were recognized at the top of the class. And because of the efforts of public safety, they went out and had, and I believe it was probably over 600. I mean, there was a ton of applications. And by the time they ended it, they got 15 extremely qualified. And I would bet money that probably 50-60% of that class was diverse. And that's an accomplishment. But what we did is graduated 15 extremely well-qualified candidates that are now going to be paramedics in this county. So to the county government as a whole, and we're part of that, we're on the right track.
I got that.
Mr. Director, if I could. And that's the one thing I try to make a point of during my little comments, and that is how together the council, along with the administration, worked so well together to put this class together. The councilman's correct. It was a great effort from almost day one when we started the recruiting process. At the end of the day, we had a very diverse class. And they worked together. And what we didn't want to do was to break them up. We didn't want to send some to Dell Tech this year and then 2 years later send the other half or a third, whatever the case might be. We were able to do it in one class. And we had our own paramedic corporal. She was there the entire time. She took part in the training. She directed the training for us. We had direct contact electronically to the classroom. They treated us like we were the only ones there. They set a standard up there, according to the director at Guild Fellowship, that they've never seen before. And odds are they'll never be able to match. These guys, and you'll see them over time, they are not just diverse, but they're smart. They're excited about being out of that classroom. They're anxious to get out on the street. They're bright. They're from across this county. Our the young lady who took the academic award is an African American female. She has a master's degree, a couple master's degrees, and that's typical of who we have in this class. There were several with multiple degrees, which is very impressive. We had one kid, he's not a kid, a young man who lived in Philadelphia, and correct me if I'm wrong, his car broke down one morning. So he got on SEPTA, and he got to that academy before the class started. That's how determined these young people were about working for us in paramedics. So we're very excited about it. Again, as I tried to do in my speech, I thank you for putting us in this position that we could bring these new kids on and add to. And we were well below our authorized strength. And we're able to. We are now there, right, Chief? And that's a great thing.
Military veterans.
We when we recruited. We went to, you name it, we were there. We were at military bases, college campuses. We were at the unemployment offices. We were in Rodney Square. You name it, we were there looking for. And we got some really good folks, three from the military. The one recruit that sort of spearheaded the ceremony that you saw, it was done by one of the recruits who is... He's either recently out of, or he's still in the military. So, it made me proud. It made us proud to see those young people do what they did. And we just now look forward to them going out on the street and saving lives. That's their job. So again, on behalf of public safety, thank you so very much for allowing us to first reach out, find some great candidates, put them through a great training program, and now put them in service in New Castle County. So thank you very much.
Let me say this to you. I don't want this to be too mean in a row where I get too emotionally charged, but all the sand I raised, council heard clearly and supported wherever it could. And all the folks went through, some of which are in the room, and all the exchanges back in the paper, I didn't think I'd ever see what has come to fruition on your watch. And you know, when you get surprised like that, pleasingly surprised, I can't properly convey to you right now in words how much I appreciate what you and the administration has done, what this council has done, and what we all endured
in the heat of the battle to get to where we are. But quite frankly, I didn't think that I'd see it while I was on this council. So I want to thank everybody, and it's greatly appreciated, greatly respected. So thank you very much. Councilwoman Dole, you have your hand up.
Anybody who can answer this, just taking a look at the change in the educational process, moving from, you know, I mean, what was the attrition rate when you ran through a regular classroom process like at Del Tech versus this class?
Larry Tan, Chief of EMS. We had actually refined our selection process to the point where we typically would see somewhere between 10 and 15% attrition mm-hmm. on a purely academic basis. But we also saw some problems at the late end of the program, specifically that when people would go into the purely academic program for a couple of years, they would lose touch with the fact that they were employees of the county government. And they would come out at the end, and we would have to go through a process to kind of get them back and thinking you're a part of the organization.
The culture
exactly.
Issue. Yeah.
The other piece of it was that in dealing with the purely academic environment, there's a fitness issue to deal with as well. You know, for those of you who have come out and ridden with us, it's a very physically demanding job. It's very easy to become complacent when you're in a purely academic environment. Then all of a sudden to be put out in the field where you're carrying 50 pounds of equipment, you're expected to move and lift and carry patients, and to be prone for injury. So a component of this program was not only it was a condensed academic delivery, but it also included a fitness portion as well to hopefully lessen the chances that somebody could become injured.
So it sounds like it was just a better model for the type of education that your paramedics need.
I think it's a different delivery model.
Right.
I think it, from a personal perspective, it provides an opportunity for us as an organization to build a culture of the organization and to really put an attitude of service as a part of being a county government employee. Some of the things that the director didn't talk about that this group did as a whole included a lot of community service time. They, on their own, instituted community education opportunities. They were participating in the Heart in the Game program, facilitating those events. They, on their own, decided to initiate and coordinate a 5K walk run to benefit the Stephanie Calloway Foundation, the Sussex County paramedic that was killed in the line of duty back in 2008. So they understood that a part of being a public employee was that you have to get back to the community, and they've done that even during their training program. And that's something that we haven't necessarily been able to do with the delivery.
Thank you.
Anything else under other? Comments from the public about anything?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Yeah. I just want to tell this guy thanks.
We need that program. It shows every time they've been in the house.
You know?
Right. I've said that ever since I've been here for 10 years. We don't have any program that shows.
Pay plan.